Jaya Gopi Janavallabha Girivara Dhari. Jaya Gopi Janavallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tera Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayaratha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Radha Madhava Shri Radhe Jaya Radha Shama Sunda Radha Shama Sunda Shri Radhe Jaya Kishore Kishori Jaya Kishore Kishori Jaya Kishore Kishori Jaya Shri Radhe Jaya Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Jaya Gurudev 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 Jaya Jaya Gurudev Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivraja Kacharya Ashtuta Lashata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Srila Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Sudarshan Ji Ki Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai Vaishnava Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glories to Shri Guru and Shri Gauranga All glories to Srila Prabhupada Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskrityam naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nashta prayeshva badreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki krishne swadhamo bhagate dharma gyana libisaha Kalo nashta drisham esha puranarko dhunodita paramananda pataya prema varshaksharayate sarvada sarvasevyaya shri krishnaya namostume sada sevya srimad bhagavati katayasya shravana matrena harischittam samashayet Hare Krishna. Good morning, guys. Please, I'd like to first beg both of your blessings. Somehow I'm sitting in front of you, even though I'm the little guy, and one of you should be sitting here, so forgive me for my audacity. Today we're reading from the 10th canto, concluding the first half of the Govardhan Lila, or the next few days we'll be concluding it. So we're doing text 36. It looks like somebody got a little excited and read a chapter and a half ahead and left the bookmark there. Which is wonderful. Tasmai namo vraja janai Sahachakra Atmanatmane Ahopashyata Shailosa Rupino Nugraham Vyathat Tasmai Namo Vraja Janai Sahachakra Atmanatmane Aho pasyata shailosau Rupino nugraham vyathat Please chant. Tasmai namo vraja janai Sahachakra atmanatmane Aho pasyata shailausa Rupino nugraham vyadat For word, tasmai, to him, namaha, obeisances, vraja janai, with the people of Vraj, saha, together, chakre, he made, atmana, by himself, atmane, to himself, aho, Ah, Pashyata. Just see. Shailaha. Hill. Asal. This. Rupi. Manifest in person. Naha. Upon us. Anugraham. Mercy. Vyadhat. Has bestowed. In the translation, together with the people of Vraj, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus, in effect, offering obeisances to himself. Then he said, just see how this hill has appeared in person and bestowed mercy upon us. The purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is clear from this verse that Lord Krishna had expanded himself and was appearing in his normal form among the festival goers of Vrindavan while simultaneously manifesting himself as the great form of Govardhan Hill. Thus, in his form as a child, Krishna led the residents of Vrindavan in bowing down to his new incarnation as Govardhan Hill. And to all, he pointed out the great mercy bestowed by this divine form of Govardhan. Lord Krishna's amazing transcendental activities were certainly in keeping with the festive atmosphere. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Namo Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll just reread the verse. Together with the people of Vraj, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus, in effect, offering obeisances to himself. Then he said, just see how this hill has appeared in person and bestowed mercy upon us. So, this is perhaps the most perplexing section of this whole Leela. The whole Leela has so many different angles and aspects and wonderful things that we can, I don't like the phrase flesh out anymore because it sounds like something somebody who eats meat would use, but things we can expand. So many things that we can open up and take a deeper look at. But this particular section where Krishna has taken the form of Govardhan Hill, and then, as it said here, Atmanatmane, worshipped himself, is particularly confusing for devotees and for anyone who wants to worship Govardhan and wants to understand Govardhan in a deeper way. Because earlier on, Krishna says, Shailosmi, he says, in Sanskrit, this means, I am this hill. Just see, I am this mountain. And now he's saying, look at this mountain and look how merciful he's being to us after he's taken that form. And so the kind of interesting juxtaposition of Haridev and Haridas is a little hard to understand. Because actually most people, it's kind of a secret of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this Haridas. Whereas Haridev, if you go to Vraj, everyone, you were telling me your story yesterday, Subal, about this Brahmana who said, this is Bhagavan! You can't take Bhagavan! So you go to Vraj, you go to anyone that lives near Govardhan, and they'll tell you very clearly, this is Bhagavan. And Bhagavatam is also telling us, this is Bhagavan. And so, how can he be Bhagavan and also be Haridas? It's a very, very... Sometimes we just shut it out because, okay, anyway, he's Krishna. But there's actually something very, very deep going on here. There are many very deep things going on here. There are four or five or that I know of. I mean, Krishna's pastimes are unlimited, so things are just continually going. First, I want to highlight one thing to kind of lay a foundation for this, though, and that is the simplicity of the Vrajvasis. Because the Vrajvasis are villagers in every respect. And villagers are very simple people. They don't know the Vedas in a deep way, because it's not part of their varna to study them. In the Varnashram system, if you're a Vaishya, and if Varnashram is set up in a proper way, especially the classical Varnashram of 5,000 years ago, then you can trust that the Brahmana class is pure. And so they do all the sacrifices. They learn all the Vedas. They know the mantras. And you just go about your job. You go about your day-to-day. You do your part. You offer what's needed for the sacrifices. Therefore, we see that Nanda Maharaj, he approached the Brahmanas in the village of the Brahmanas, where the Brahmanas' wives came from to offer everything to Krishna. And they said, we want to do a sacrifice. Because they themselves, they don't know so much. That's part of the particular sweetness of Raj is there. And we see in this Leela that that's plainly in effect, because actually it's a Vedic injunction that you should worship Indra if you're in the Varnashram system. It isn't just some whimsical family tradition. But Nanda Maharaj himself said, I don't really know. It's something we've always done, I can tell you that. My family's always done it. My father did it. His father did it. But actually, it's a Vedic injunction. But he didn't know. So the Vrajvasis, they're villagers in every... They're the perfect villagers, actually. They're the most simple. And one way that we can understand this is from the Putana Leela. Because when Putana came, the Vrajvasis, being very simple people, they were unable to see what Shukadev Goswami describes as a dagger in a very beautiful sheath. The only thing they could see was the sheath. Any Kshatriya would have been able to see this person has ill intentions. Because Kshatriyas are very keen. They're very able to they're diplomatic. They're able to understand motives. And they deal with that stuff all day, politics. But the Vrajvasis, they just... She's so beautiful. And she wants to see Krishna? Okay. Let her see Krishna. My baby, for any mother, you can imagine if a strange woman just walked into your house and said, give me your baby. I want to see your baby. Hang on, let's have some tea first. You know, let's sit down and talk. I should get to know you a little bit. But Mother Yashoda is such a simple-hearted person that this Putana, she came and in one of the literatures of the Goswamis, she actually said, my child has recently died, and my breasts are full of milk, and it's paining me so much. I need to suckle some child. Can I please suckle your child? And it will relieve my pain. And Mother Yashoda felt so compassionate that she thought, yes, please, go, no problem. And they thought she was the goddess of fortune. They mistook the worst demoness imaginable for the goddess of fortune. So the Vrajrasis, they're very simple, and they're protected by this simplicity, actually, because they're completely absorbed in Krishna's leelas, and so there's no question of any external force ever hurting them to any degree. So the simplicity of the Vrajrasis is paramount in their mood. And so when they're seeing this whole leela with Govardhan being manifest and everything coming out, one thing our acharyas point out is that although this pastime seems to create a contradiction of mood, because it's very important that we understand the Vraj Leelas from the perspective of the Vrajvasis being incapable of conceiving of Krishna as God. They cannot see their son as God, because if they see Krishna as God, the whole jig is up. The entirety of the mood of Vraj is totally spoiled. There's no question of it being Vraj anymore if Krishna is God. In their perspective, we understand and we read the first nine cantos of the Bhagavatam, so we can understand as sadhakas ontologically, Krishna's God. And then when we read these things, we won't make so many mistakes that, oh, well, God would do this or God would do that. We understand the underlying foundation of why he's doing these things, of what Leela is, of how that pleases God, of how that facilitates the highest levels of rasa. And after we understand that, the 10th canto sets all of that aside. Because for the Vrajvasis, it's always set aside. Actually, the original form of God, Swayamrupa Krishna, is not God. For all intents and purposes, he's not God. For the Vrajvasis, he's not God. Krishna shows this many times. He shows it particularly with Mother Yashoda by opening his mouth and showing the universal form, showing all the universes, showing her that she's looking at herself, looking into Krishna's mouth, looking at herself, looking into Krishna's mouth, looking at herself, looking into Krishna's mouth. And she thinks for a second, my God, the words of Garga Rishi, can this be, can my son be God? And then immediately, what is this? No, I'm hallucinating. Some ghost is casting some spell on me. What is this nonsense? What is this apparition who has cast his magic over my son? You know, some kachari, some witch has come. So many other demons have come, and that Putana was here, and she did something to my son, and I've seen so many things. This must be another terrible trick. Or maybe it's the Supreme Lord himself, Vishnu, up there, and he's doing this thing. But she cannot think for more than a fraction of a second that my son is God. And so the Vrajvasis, they also, the rest of them, they can't think Krishna is God. In this section, Sanatan Goswami, in one of his commentaries, on verse 37, which is the next verse, he explains, after through this whole chapter, very, very explicitly saying that Govardhan is the best servant of Krishna, he explains that actually this other form that Krishna takes when he stands on top of Govardhan Hill and says, Shailosmi, I am the hill. All the Vrajvasis, they worship, they see him as Vishnu. So they don't really make the connection that Krishna, our little son here, who's facilitated all of this, who's just told us all these funny philosophies and somehow convinced us to do this worship instead of the worship we're accustomed to doing. They don't make the connection that that little boy is this magnificent form standing on top of this hill as Bhagavan. And Jiva Goswami, he enunciates this very nicely, and I'll just read the exact quote. He says, this is not a contradiction to the mood, since this was a different form without the perspective of being their son. They, as a custom, offered respects to Narayan and other forms. So he's highlighting that there was a stark difference between what they saw in their son who was standing next to them and who, as we see here, was showing them how to worship this form, and the form itself. It's not that they thought this is my son Krishna standing on the hill in this wonderful form. And it is, you know, we're now worshipping Krishna who's revealing his opulence and his majesty. They just saw some miraculous, wonderful exhibition of God's power. Because Nanda Maharaj, he worships Vishnu. He's worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev every day. Actually, this is Madhu Mangal's role. It's not his only role. He has much, much deeper, intimate roles. But his role in Vraj is to come every day to Nanda Maharaj's house because he's a Brahmana and they're Vaishyas. They don't do puja. And he does the puja for Nrisimhadev and for Vishnu. He does all the puja for the deities in Nandagaon. So Nanda Maharaj, he's worshipping Lord Vishnu, or he's having Madhu Mangal worship Lord Vishnu. He's worshipping Lord Nrisimhadev. And so the Vrajvasis, when they see this form of Govardhan, they see Haridev. They're not thinking Haridev, this person on top of the hill, is Krishna. They're unable to think like that. They're not able to think like that. In the Harivamsa, we hear more, our Acharya's quote from the Harivamsa, different descriptions of what that form said. And he said, yes, you worship me and everything will be good. The cows will be happy, you will be happy, you'll be protected from sickness. Very much giving the benedictions of Bhagavan. Giving the benedictions that they're asking for, or that's kind of a mixed topic, a difficult topic to go into, because they also don't have motivation for these things. But because they're in this lila and like that, and they're simple people, they want protection. Therefore, in a few verses, Krishna will say, you should worship this hill, because if you don't worship this hill, if you disrespect him, he'll take the form of a snake and he'll bite you. And then you'll be finished. Or he'll kill anyone who disrespects this type of worship. So they're very simple people. So we can see how Krishna motivates them and how he furthers this lila. But you see, there's a very important, it's underlying in one sense, there's an underlying motivation, but in another sense, it's the most prominent motivation. Because it touches on, and actually it doesn't just touch on it, it is the entire motivation behind all of the Vraj Leelas. And that is that Krishna is very, very greedy. We worship a greedy God. For most other traditions, that's, even for most other Hindus, that's a difficult pill to swallow. Your God is greedy. The Christians, they say that God is a jealous God, but all of the philosophy surrounding that, I'm not so versed in, so I can't comment further on that, but I've heard a lot of devotees make this quote, that God said, I am a jealous God. You should worship only me. But I think the context there is a bit different. So in most traditions, the idea of God having a vice is antithetical to the idea of God. And even for people who follow the Vedic canon, generally, Bhagavan is considered as Atmaram. He's self-satisfied. There's no question of greed on God's part because he has everything. He's completely content in his own existence. Haribol. He's totally content in his own existence and in the fact that everything is emanating from him. There's nothing that can really do anything for him. Vishnu in Vaikuntha, he's famous for laying on the bed of Anantashesh and Lakshmi being the most beautiful woman in all of existence, constantly wanting his attention, wanting to serve him, and him being completely detached. Just the embodiment of renunciation, not desiring her at all in a greedy type of way. Obviously, they have some type of pastimes and they do things together, but it's very known that he's just detached. He's not like a worldly man. Krishna also isn't like a worldly man, but this is Naralila. And so he exhibits some things that seem quite starkly like a worldly person. So this greed that Krishna has, which is actually what is facilitating this entire pastime. Our acharyas, they explain that actually the reason that he took this form and sat on top of the hill and exhibited the form of Haridev is because He again just wanted to relish all the love of the Vrajavasis. He knew if he facilitated this entire pastime, then they would all cook, they would all make all these offerings simultaneously, everyone in Vraj. Because every now and again he goes to this house, he goes to that house. When he's out with the cowherd boys, he eats this cowherd boy's mother's preparations and this one's mother's preparations. But this was a good way to take the cooking of everybody. And it's well known that cooking is, it's practically the closest you can get to somebody's heart when somebody offers something that they've cooked to you. It's very, very close to their heart. So Krishna thought this is a great way to relish the love of all of the Vrajvasis across all of Vraj. Therefore, it's said that he manifested this form, and even they couldn't see all of the arms and hands, long and short, of this form. Krishna, he was eating everything from every corner of Vraj, all of the offerings, because there were also Vrajvasis that couldn't directly be there. They lived too far away. This happened very spur of the moment. This wasn't like, okay, in 2 weeks we're going to go and we're going to do this. Krishna just showed up while Nanda was doing the Indra Puja and said, don't do this, let's do this. And then it all fell together and they did it. So Krishna ate all of those offerings and he ate the offerings of everybody else in Vraj. Why? Because it was just another way to fulfill the unending greed, the desire of Krishna for the love of the Vrajvasis. This is why he did this pastime, this aspect of this pastime. And then later we're going to hear about how he lifted the hill to facilitate simultaneous reciprocation with everyone and every rasa at the same time for 7 days continuously. This is Krishna's real motivation. Purifying Indra of his pride is an aside. It's a secondary result. It's a secondary thing that was also accomplished by lifting the hill and by doing all of these things and changing the sacrifices. And it also furthered other leelas that he would do later in the future. In one sense, it's also important because Indra is Krishna's devotee. And so it's not that it's a negligible thing, but it isn't the main purpose. Because when we look at the Vraj Leelas, we always have to understand the main purpose is always going to be the facilitation of Krishna's Vraj devotees, of the Vraj Vasis, and Krishna's love being heightened. So this was a way that Krishna thought, I can do this. Therefore, he spoke all of these funny philosophies, and he did all of these things, and he took this form on top of the hill. And in that way, he was able to eat everything, all of the offerings at the same time, like he'd never done before. So this is Krishna's desire behind this. And some substantiation for this, we can go all the way down to the Bhagavad Gita, which is the ABCs. It's like the entry book into Krishna conscious philosophy. Bhagavad Gita lays a foundation which allows one to begin to understand. It actually doesn't touch at all on the Vraj Leelas and on the intimacy of Krishna with devotees who no longer think he's God, because it culminates in one's surrender to Krishna as God, because that's very important for anyone who is going to become a sadhaka or for someone who is a sadhaka to understand. This again is why we have 9 cantos preceding the 10th canto, because we have to get this right in order to enter into what Vrindavan is. We historically have many examples of people who didn't get it right and then make so many erroneous, ridiculous philosophical misconceptions and missteps in trying to interpret or see or look at the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Therefore, Prabhupada was very heavy about people who jumped to the 10th canto, specifically people who jumped to the Rasa Leela, because it is the most difficult to understand, because it requires the most... it requires one to be the most couched in the philosophy of who Krishna is. Therefore, when Prabhupada wrote the Krishna book, if you read the Rasalila pastime that he wrote there, he very, very much reinforced the fact that this is God who's doing this. This is Bhagavan. And he gave whole paragraphs and pages explaining the tattva behind this thing. because he didn't want anyone who read it just on the street to pick the book up and develop these misconceptions. But even in the Bhagavad Gita, we do hear something about this greed of Krishna. And then in the 10th canto, we get it re-enumerated. So Krishna speaks this verse that every new bhakta learns, because it's practically the prasadam verse. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prajchiti. Whatever you offer, whether it's as insignificant as a flower or fruit, some water, even a leaf, I eat that if you offer it with bhakti. So we all know this verse. But this verse has very special significance, because he also says in the second line, our acharyas point out, it sounds redundant. He says, tad aham bhakti paritam, that which is offered with bhakti, I also eat. I also eat that thing that is offered with bhakti. And it's the same thing as the first two lines. So why is Krishna re-emphasizing this so much? So we get a glimpse of this when we see the 10th canto. When we're nearing the end of the 10th canto, it's chapter 80 in the Sudama Vipra Lila. Krishna had a friend named Sudama who he went to Gurukul with. And this friend was a very poor Brahmana. After their Gurukul ended, he lived his life in stark poverty. We can't imagine the poverty. Any of the bums you see on the street of Chicago, they're probably not as poor as Sudama. Because the bums in Chicago, there are so many homeless shelters, and I mean, if as long as you're not really deeply schizophrenic, there are 100 places in this city where you can go and you can fill your belly every day. It's quite easy. The government will give you some money, you can fill your belly. You know, they're not as poor as Sudama was. Sudama, he was so poor that his wife would have to beg, and actually she was so distraught, because sometimes she would be unsuccessful in her begging, and she would have to see him suffer and not eat. And sometimes she was actually suffering more than him, because she would only be able to beg enough for him to eat. And so his wife was even more poor than he was, because she would go out and do all the begging, she would bring him food, cook for him, whatever little bit she was able to get, he would eat, and then she would have to starve. Krishna's friend Sudama was so poor. So one day Sudama went to Dwarka. Fast forwarding through all of the juicy details of the Leela, because we've told it 3 or 4 times sitting here on the Vyasasan. He had brought some chipped rice, and he realized, I can't offer this to Krishna. This is disgusting. This has been eaten by the rats. It's been under my armpit for most of my 2,000-mile journey. I ate a little bit of it because I was very, very hungry. So he thinks, I can't offer this. And Krishna says, Sudama, I know you. You're a cultured Brahmana. I know you wouldn't have come to see me without a gift. So I think you've brought something. What is that thing? And Sudama blushed and thought, no. I didn't bring anything. And Krishna said, come now, I see you have something in your belt. What is that? And Sudama, he said, that's nothing. I don't know. What? It's nothing. And Krishna said, come. I know you. I know your heart. We were in Gurukul together. Give me whatever that is. And Sudama said, at this point, because Krishna was chiding him as a friend, Sudama just hung his head. And he didn't say anything. He was ashamed. Because he was thinking, how could I have even thought to bring this? Krishna is the king. He's so opulent. He's so amazing. He's my friend. This is disgusting. How could I bring him this thing? And so he just hung his head. And so then Krishna, he snatched that chipped rice. He snatched it. And Sudama, no, what are you doing? And Krishna took it. He opened the bag. And he saw this rat-eaten, sweaty, maybe moldy, we don't hear a description of moldy, so I can't say that, but this sweaty, rat-eaten stuff that Sudama had already nibbled on, he'd taken bites of as he was taking his journey, and he said, wow, you brought this for me? Oh my God. And he took a bite. He didn't do it with his left hand, he only does that in Vraj. He took a bite. Oh, this is so good. Took another bite. Went to take a third bite. And Rukmini stopped him. She's in a different mood. So she was thinking, no. He only eats the best preparations. He only eats what I cook. He only eats what the palace chefs cook. It's going to hurt his stomach if he eats this raw chipped rice. No. So she stopped him. But Krishna, he told Sudama, because Sudama was feeling so bad, he said this same verse that he speaks in the Bhagavad Gita. He said, Patram pushpam palam toyam yo me bhaktya prayachchati. He said, don't worry about what it is. Don't think it matters what you've offered to me. Actually, the only thing I eat is the bhakti. You could offer me a fruit. You could offer me some water. You could even offer me flowers or leaves. You could even offer me inedible things. This is what Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells us. If you offer it with bhakti, like you have in your heart, Sudama, I eat those leaves. That's the tastiest thing I can imagine. Even dry, inedible leaves, I relish them. And we see this when Krishna visited the house of Vidura. His wife, she was so ecstatic and she didn't know he was coming. The only thing she had was bananas. And she was in such a fit of ecstasy that she peeled the bananas, threw away the fruit, and was giving Krishna peels. And Krishna didn't say, hey, lady, that's the fruit. You know, I understand you love me, but can I have that part? He just ate the peels. And he was eating peel after peel because she didn't even notice what she was doing. He was just, peel after peel. Have you ever bitten into a banana peel? Anyone here ever bitten into a banana peel? Once. Was it pleasant? Orange would be even worse. Yeah, that's different. They cook that in sugar and, you know, that's a little bit of orange peel, but particularly banana peel. One time I bit into a banana peel when I was a child. I don't know why. You just do these things. It sucks all the moisture right out of your mouth. It's the epitome of astringent. If anyone's ever eaten amalaki, it just sucks the moisture out of your mouth. You're like, it's not sour. It's a different type of flavor. It's just, your mouth just goes dry like a desert. That's what a banana peel is like. Krishna was eating banana peel after banana peel. Materially speaking, there's nothing nice about this. But Vidura's wife had so much bhakti. She was in a fit of ecstasy just seeing Krishna. And so Krishna was relishing banana peel after banana peel after banana. And then Vidura came in. What are you doing? This is all wrong. We're supposed to cook nice for him. He's finally coming to our house. But Krishna didn't care. Krishna wants the bhakti. He's greedy for it. He's greedy for it. He was greedy for those banana peels. He was greedy for that chipped rice of Sudama. And this is outside of Vraj. In Vraj, what to speak of what's cooked by the hands of the Vrajvasis. So Krishna, he orchestrated all of this so he could sit on top of the hill and eat everything they cooked, all of the best cooking that they could muster. Because that was the nature of this sacrifice. It was a festival. And it was the best. The Vrajvasis, they're simple people. Anyway, we hear descriptions of what Krishna eats every day. It's not very simple. It's pretty elaborate. But by that standard, we can imagine what they cooked for this sacrifice. Because if we can read what their idea of a normal day is, and then we can see that this was a special day, just like in the early days with Srila Prabhupada, we hear so many, like, I'm from Gainesville. And so there's one devotee lady there. She's since left her body. What was her name? Anyway, I'm sorry to her, I can't remember her name, but she was famous for cooking the most amazing, opulent, wonderful feasts every day. Their Sunday feast was like 30 preps. It was just insane. You know, and everything was floating in rivers of ghee. There's a story, Vishnu Jan Maharaj went there. It's the only temple that he ever actually, he could not do kirtan after he ate what this lady cooked. Not Gayatri. Oh, what was her name? Anyway, so you can imagine, if that's what they cooked like every day, you can imagine what was their Janmashtami feast. What was their Gaur Purnim feast? Because you have to take it to another level. You have to take it over the top. That's what we do. Because we're not cooking for us. We're cooking quantity for all the people that come, but we're cooking for them. And so we want to show them, like, we want to offer you the best. We look at Govardhan Puja, sometimes Govardhan Puja, here we are. You go to a temple, and the congregation has made 200 or 300 different suites for Giriraj. So we can imagine the level of opulence, the level of care and devotion that went into this big feast that was prepared. And Krishna just found a way to eat that. He found a way to, yes! Finally, I'll have it. And he's done this before. Brahma Vimohan Leela. The main reason Brahma Vimohan Leela was there, again, Lord Brahma is there, and he's one of the main purposes, but still somewhat secondary, because he lives outside of Vrindavan. What did Krishna really want? He wanted to directly reciprocate with all of the older ladies of Raj and all of the cows who had calves. He wanted to directly reciprocate with them. Not only did he want to directly reciprocate with them, he was greedy for their love. This is Krishna's desire. This is what he wants. And I'll just end with two really nice stories. They're very short stories, and there are many stories like this that come from Jagannath Puri, because Puri is a special place where this tattva is very, very much understood. Jagannath really, really likes the love of his devotees. The entire reason Jagannath exists is because of some devotees of his, the Shabaras, who were outcasts. And so he was staying with them as Nila Madhava, and they were doing the worship. They were pig farmers. The caste still exists, and actually for some months every year, they take over all of the worship of Jagannath. All the pandas, the people who are born as brahmanas, they step aside, and the most intimate worship that's done to Lord Jagannath is done by this. They're not even shudras; they're in the outcast level of people, in the classic varnashram and subsidiary caste system. So Jagannath is very much versed in this. I cross the boundaries of varnashram and I cross the boundaries of everything for the love of my devotees. He's like the principal deity of the thing. And so there's one famous pastime where Jagannath, for a few days, one of the pujaris, he was thinking, what is this nonsense? He would go in the morning and he would see that there were all sorts of thorny grass and sand spurs and dirt, and it's like somebody came in and just rolled Jagannath around on the ground outside. And you know, he was very disturbed by this, because worship should be nice. Anyway, their standards are very weird in Jagannath Puri, so much so that Ramanujacharya, when he went to correct it, Jagannath kicked him out and he woke up 2,000 miles away. So they have very special standards, but still, one of their standards is not to leave Lord Jagannath dirty and covered in sand spurs. This was even too much for them. So this pujari was thinking, what is this nonsense? And so one day he stayed up and he waited in the corner quietly. Obviously Jagannath knew he was there. It's not that he didn't pull one over on Jagannath. But he saw Jagannath get up and leave. And he followed him. He thought, what is this? I've never seen this before. And so he went. And Jagannath went to a garden. And he sat underneath a jackfruit tree hidden in some bushes, because there was one simple Purivasi, one simple lady, sitting in the garden singing Gita Govinda. And he was relishing that singing. And then he went back. And in the process of being in that bush, he got all these thorns and sand spurs, and he got dirty because he was sitting on the ground. And he went back. And so the pujari understood, wow, Jagannath loves his devotees so much. He's moved so much by bhakti. He's even willing to do this. He leaves his nice temple. We're worshiping him so nicely, offering him so many things. We sing Gita Govinda for him every night. But he went outside. I don't even know who this lady is. I don't know her name. I don't know what family she's from. But Jagannath is so moved.
He goes to hear her singing every night. This is why. This is why I'm seeing him so dirty. And I have another story which is even more mind-blowing. This one. This is a Shalagram Shila. So one day a Brahmana walked into a blacksmith to have some paraphernalia made. And he saw something that just... he couldn't comprehend, and he was... it's just the most horrible thing maybe that Brahmana ever saw in his life. He saw this blacksmith pounding out metal, heating it up, putting it on the anvil, pounding it out, beating. Because if you've ever seen blacksmith work done, it's heavy work. It's really intense, and you hit the thing when it's blazing hot, and then sparks go everywhere, and you have to really beat the heck out of it. You know, it's really intense work. And this Brahmana saw this ignorant Shudra blacksmith. He has a big Shalagram Shila as his anvil. A huge Shalagram Shila. And he's banging the Shalagram Shila with the hammer. Boom, over and over. And this Brahmana is, you know, he's worshipped Shalagram Shilas his whole life. That's part of what being a Brahmana is. So he's thinking, oh my God, this is too much. What is going on? This is unbelievable. And so he says to the blacksmith, look, you tell me whatever you want, I'll get you whatever stone you need, I'll give you whatever money you need, I want your anvil, you please sell it to me. And so the blacksmith, being a simple man, okay, I don't know why you're so worked up, yeah, it's just an anvil, it's pretty cheap, you just give me what it's worth. And so the Brahmana happily gave him some money and took the anvil away and started to worship him and was thinking, oh man, you know, thank God I got him away from that blacksmith. And he cooked a nice feast, invited him into his home. You know, this is Vishnu, so you have to treat him very nicely. And he cooked this nice feast, and then he went to sleep that night after doing the puja and doing everything, maybe the first time this Shila had ever had proper puja done. And that night he had a dream. And Jagannath came to him, because Jagannath was in the form of that Shila, of that anvil. And he said, dear Brahmana, thank you so much. It was wonderful, the puja that you've done, and you fed me nicely, and I very much appreciate it. But tomorrow morning, could you bring me back to that blacksmith? And the Brahmana thought, oh my God, what offense have I done? What? Why? You want to go back there? What is it? I'm sorry, I'll fix whatever I did. And Jagannath said, no, it's not that you did anything wrong. But when that blacksmith is pounding me on the head with that hammer, he sings this verse from Gita Govinda that I like so much. So please bring me back there. You just give me back to the blacksmith so we can see how much Jagannath, how much Krishna loves devotion only. Even his very simple blacksmith devotee who doesn't even know that this is Jagannath is banging him in the head with a hammer. He's singing with deep devotion. This line from Gita Govinda, Jagannath is happy. I'm not saying you should bang Kishore and Kishori with a hammer. And if you do, then you better have a lot of devotion. Yeah, well, maybe you have the devotion to back it up. But I'm saying that if you do have the devotion, that crosses all of the boundaries. And we see for the Rajvasis, this is what Krishna was very, very deeply interested in. So, I'll stop there. If it's already 8:30, but I'm sure if we have one or two quick questions, comments, or corrections, we can do something. I find it so nice how this pastime really gives us so many angles on Krishna's heart and what he likes.
Hare Krishna, bro. Thank you for your class, and especially highlighting Lord Krishna's gratitude, and that's why one of the main points I try to keep in mind, because by contrast, we see Krishna's, he owns everything, but he's so grateful. We don't own anything, but sometimes we could be so ungrateful. I kind of connected to the main highlight I want to maybe share. I haven't really formulated a question, but maybe you could expand on it. You're expert at, you know, expanding on a lot of pastimes, so thank you for that. This pastime mentions that Krishna meditated pretty much on himself. He bowed down to himself. And this brought to mind, maybe you've heard of this pastime in Canto 2, Chapter 5, where Narada Muni, he was kind of wondering about Brahma. Basically, Lord Brahma is known as the supreme being in the universe, but he noticed Brahma was meditating. He says, "My dear Lord, you know, why are you meditating? Because people only meditate and pray when they need help from somebody. You were just mentioning the bums in the street. They go to, they could go anywhere to get some help. They always, if you don't have money, you go to somebody with money. If you don't have food or clothing, you go to." So Brahma says, "I don't have any intelligence, so I'm meditating on somebody who does have intelligence." And in chapter 70 of Krishna, but Prabhupada says, who does Krishna meditate on? He meditates on himself. But Prabhupada says, that does not mean we should also meditate on ourselves. Because in the material world, we see that a Hollywood beautiful woman, she may meditate on her beauty, but then time humbles everyone. Then she begins to meditate on a plastic surgeon. I need some help. And this is the last point I appreciate about Queen Kunti. She basically says there are two kinds of devotees, those who chant and those who enchant. Those who chant glorify God. Those who enchant want to be glorified as God. Jamaishraya Shruta Sri Bir Edamana Manupaman Naivarhati Abhidatumvai Swama Kinshana Gochana. Prabhupada says in his report, when we meditate on ourselves, when we get some little opulence, we don't chant the holy name sincerely. We begin to meditate on ourselves. So my question, if I had to ask a question, because in this day and age, we see people spend so much time. This is actually a point I really appreciate you made when Acharya Nisha gave the last class about, devotees spending time on Shastra. And so my question, if I had to ask one, what are some steps we could do to spend less time on Facebook and more time on Faithbook? Because otherwise we'll remain an Indra-type devotee, always counting our views, how many horse sacrifices, how many views I have more than others. What are some steps we could take that before Krishna, you know, really humbles us in a very embarrassing way? I think we all have to go through that sooner or later, but what are some steps we could take to develop this enthusiasm to meditate and channel Krishna and not on ourselves? Because time humbles everyone in the end.
You have to, or one has to, not you, but one has to. Well, that's wonderful that you can admit that for yourself. Many people can't. But one has to associate with people who already have that taste. That's my firm conviction. There's no real other way. And therefore you see that people who don't have the Sangha, they're not able to find some taste in that. It's said very clearly in the Bhagavatam that from Mahat Seva and Satam Kripa, which means mercy of a devotee, that's how bhakti starts. And then from serving those devotees, the result is Vasudeva Kata Ruchi, his taste for hearing about Lord Vasudev. So we have to find a devotee who we like and who is affectionate to us and who is deep in their understanding, and we have to hang around them. And once we do that, and once we see how they're able to relish, and because we have developed an appreciation for them, the desire in our heart will sprout that I also want to be like them. Actually, this is mainly what happened to devotees who came and met Srila Prabhupada. They saw Srila Prabhupada, they saw in him something that they very much appreciated, they stayed around him, they saw his taste for the Shastra, they saw his taste for bhakti and for devotional service, and they're what they appreciated in their life fundamentally changed. They were given somewhat of a mystical, because bhakti is always going to be a mystical process. I don't care how you try to distill it and boil it down and make it systematic. They mystically were touched by the fact that there was bhakti in this person's heart. And then they also said, I want to dedicate my life to this. This is how it works.
This is what the Bhagavatam tells us. So that's what's required. And we can do any number of other things, but we can judge a tree by its fruit. If it's just forced, then eventually we'll stop. Just like we can force anything. I can force myself to follow any diet. I can force myself to run every day, even though running is the most unappetizing, boring, you know, ass-like work that one can imagine to do, even if you get really good music to run to. You know, eventually you'll stop. The mind is very powerful in that when you decide to make your mind up, human beings can do really wonderful things. But there's a difference between deciding to do something and having taste for it. And taste comes from someone who already has taste in the realm of bhakti. So we have to find some sangha. And it's as simple as that. If you find sangha, then it becomes wonderful. Kirtan is a very nice example of this. If you do kirtan with somebody who really relishes kirtan, it becomes immediately ecstatic and immediately wonderful, and you're able to get into it and dance and have fun and, you know, feel the benefits of the process. But if you just read about kirtan in a book and you sit down and try to do it, then what are you going to end up with? You're not going to really end up with, you won't get the heart of the thing. The heart of the thing, no pun intended, it's always in the heart. It's in the heart of the devotee. Because Krishna is interested in what's in the heart of his devotees. That's also how it's transmitted. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he writes that bhakti is caught like a disease. It's where we all hear about the coronavirus. You get the coronavirus if you go around somebody who has the coronavirus. You get bhakti if you go around someone who has bhakti. So we have to seek out someone who has bhakti, and we have to want to associate with them. And it's that simple. We live in an institution, and so sadly, this principle, it has been not sidelined, but it has been kind of obfuscated by the idea that, okay, now the goal of my life is to just be accepted in the society, take a guru, get a name, and get some beads, because then I'm part of the society, and, you know, they'll stop calling me bhakta, and, you know, I'll be respected. So that principle of approaching a guru and getting that sangha and actually serving them and then getting some taste. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, bhajaneshu spriha. That bhajana kriya, it actually means bhajaneshu spriha. Spriha means a desire. So from approaching a guru and serving that guru, one in one's heart desires to do bhajan. Gets a deep desire to practice bhakti. Whereas before, one was doing it because they could see, okay, this will be good for me, this is nice, this will be wonderful. But once you come in touch with the sadhu, and you approach him, and you get some mercy, then in your heart sprouts a desire, a deep desire to do bhakti. So, if we don't do that, then basically the whole process is just waiting for us to do that. Therefore, until we've really taken shelter of a devotee, and it doesn't just have to be a Diksha Guru, somebody who is around us who has some taste, until we've really taken shelter of that person, the entire, everything we're doing, all the rounds we chant, all the reading we do, all the times we offer obeisances to the deities, it's literally just meant to bring us to that point, because it's required. That's the thing. So that's how you get taste for the Shastra. That's how you lose taste for Facebook. You meet someone who has already lost their taste for Facebook. And then it's easy because you see, wow, this is what I want to do. This is better. But if you just speculate on it and you can't find the humility to approach someone, then you're going to stay on Facebook because it's tasty. You'll stay in this movement and you'll speak so much controversy. There is no dearth of controversy in this movement. There's so much controversy and so many devotees are so wrapped in it. Why? Because it's tasty. Because it's nice. Why do people watch Jerry Springer and all of these other, I don't even know if that's still a show, but why do people watch all of these very controversial shows, and why do they watch Fox News and CNN? Because it's nothing but controversy. It's a rasa. And it's one that we can taste. And so until you find somebody who's on a different plane, you're still going to want to taste that. It's going to be, yes, very good. This is very tasty. Prabhupada also said like this, we're tasting abominable things. Why? Because we're adjusted to them. We're adjusted to this
awful taste, actually. Just like people are adjusted to the taste of beef. There are people out there that you, if you take their beef away from them, it's, oh my God, how can I live my life without bacon? I couldn't do it without bacon. You know, this is a thing. So we need a change in taste. It means we need to meet somebody who has had a change in taste. I'll stop there. Sorry, a little bit of a ramble, a little bit of a tangent. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadramarani Sudarshanji Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gauranitai Ki Jai. Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Ki Jai. Shri the AC Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri the Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vaishnava Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.